you may do so, and we will open the meeting for questions. As a reminder, please be aware that if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the Light a Candle podcast. Welcome to the OA Light a Candle meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find links to prior podcasts from this meeting available in multiple formats. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Susan G.
Hi, everyone. I'm Susan, recovered compulsive overeater, and I will start my timer just because it will keep me going. Hi, everyone. So nice to be back in this room and those lovely new chairs and to see some of you. And welcome to the newcomers and those returning, and welcome to our friend from out of town. And I'm glad I remember my photos because not all of you have seen them. They are just the same, except the ones I show on screen have some fellowship ones, which I haven't printed, but you get to see what I look like today. So thank you to Seppi. Even though she had to leave, she kindly came by and said hi to me, which was really, really kind. So here we are, Overeaters Anonymous, a club that I never, ever wanted to belong to. I certainly didn't, and I resisted for 16 years, and I ate my way up and down to a size 26 dress, as you will see in the pictures. I was 250 pounds. I have not weighed that for a long time. I have just over 24 years, and it's God. It's not me. It is not a food plan. It isn't how many meetings I go to. It's all of those things, those tools, everything. They are all great, but it is a relationship with a power outside of myself that helps me stay stopped today. I tried all of the frothy emotional appeal that was available, and if you live here in Los Angeles, there is plenty. There is plenty. There used to be billboards everywhere, and the Sunday papers used to pull out the back of them, and there they were, the diet of the week. And I always remember eating differently to all of my friends. Even growing up, I can remember being in ballet class and thinking, why can you see straight through their legs? You know, you're at the bar and, you know, it just looks a little bit different. And I remember running around and not being interested in the desserts at the birthday parties or what was going on. And I always wanted to assist because that was when I learned to lie and sneak and cheat with food. So I've been doing that for a very, very long time. I remember asking our local doctor years ago for diet pills, and I got them at 12 or 13 years old. Just wasn't a problem, which is astounding. I don't know that it's that much harder today. But luckily, I don't go down that path anymore. And I dieted, like I say, my way up and down. I love that you still bring water. Arlene said, you need a drink. I go, no, they give you water there. I know they still do it. Thank you. So I moved to America in 1982. When they were getting the airport ready for the Olympics at the time on TWA, which most of you won't know what that is. It was an airline that was defunct, and they wore these gorgeous little outfits. And because they were, and I dieted my way to get here, and I never forget this because it was just so awful, and I did the Beverly Hills diet before I moved, and I have done everything and more that there is except for all that new stuff that everybody's doing now, and I have no intention of doing it. And so the Beverly Hills diet was somewhere where you ate a different fruit every single day. So on the day that I was flying here for 10 plus hours, it was pineapple day. Now, most people would, and you could take different things on planes at that time. It wasn't as regulated as it is now. And so by the time I got off the plane from when I left London to here, I had canker sores throughout my mouth. That is how much pineapple I ate. I moved here. I thought, this is it. I've arrived. I have arrived, just like Bill Wilson when he goes through all of his stuff. Then I discovered drive-thrus. Nobody was monitoring my food, and I could do what I want, and I could pay a lot of money for a lot of different diets that worked. I mean, I dieted my way up and down. If you didn't see me for a few weeks, you sort of stood back when you saw me again. And it was always, this is it, this is the end, this is what I'm doing, this is what's going on. You know, look, I've done everything that you've all done and more. I always like to tell my jaw wiring story. because it's just, you know, like it says in the big book, if you are as seriously alcoholic as we once were, there is no middle of the road solution. So super idea. Susan has a friend who tells her, my dentist, he'll wire your mouth shut. He lives next door to us. Just come over, bring $300 in cash. I mean, what a deal, right, at the time. And you have to understand that when you get your jaw wired shut, like God forbid you have an accident or something, it is a needle with wire. And they are going in between each tooth and up and down. And I've voluntarily gone there, and I'm crying throughout. What am I doing? I'm just knowing. And I go ahead and I leave there, and I'm annoyed. Can you imagine? An addict being restless, irritable, or discontented at their own decisions. I'm annoyed, so I think, well, now what? How am I going to eat? What am I going to do? But I'd already discovered every drive-through and knew where to go. And here's the part. The 3 months, I did not lose 1 pound at 250 pounds while I had my jaw wired shut. Do you know how many drive-throughs I hit in a day? Do you know the calories in those cold things? Well, they kept me very sustained, clearly, because when I had my mouth unwired, I was thinking, I don't feel any different. And nothing was different. Nothing was different. Lack of power, that was the issue, but I didn't know that. I just thought, you know, a new vision board, a new guy, when I lose weight, when I do this, I'll go here, I'll go there, and nothing worked. I mean, if I couldn't move to America and have it work, you know, what was going to work? And then I think it was right around that time or after that, I was going to a gym where you were very welcome if you were large. And that's what it was all about, and dancing to the oldies and the goldies, and felt very, very comfortable. And I met a woman there. I really don't know what the circumstances were, but she invited me to come to a meeting. I didn't have a car, and the person who I'd gone to this gym with was going. So I was a little screwed. And I went, and it was the Overeats Anonymous 100-pounder meeting, which was at the Reseda office, the Derby office, which was the valley, because we have two intergroups, you know, like 10 miles away, because we must. And I went to this meeting, and the room was packed at the time. Meetings were 2 hours, and there was a 15-minute break to welcome the newcomer, and everybody went outside and smoked. So I went, and I can remember the room being so crowded, and there was something like that back sink unit that ran along the back side of the office, and they also had the lockers. Every sort of clubhouse has it, where all the different meetings put their books, and that was the only place to sit. And I remember I couldn't get my bum up there, and so I was so annoyed. I had to stand for the whole time, and it was hot, and I was fat. There was some air conditioning, and everyone was smiling and laughing and cuddling and taking, and it was so great to see everyone. And I just thought, this is a cult, I'm leaving. This is why they told me not to move to America. This is what happens. So I left. But the seed was planted. And living in Los Angeles, everyone you meet who are in all the cool clubs, they either go to AA, or they go to something called DA, or they go to GA. And if you work in the field that I'm in, oh, everybody goes. So I couldn't stop meeting people. And I talked about my weight a lot. I told you a lot about my issue. And I this and I that and blah, blah, blah. And at the time I was working at a law firm, and it was 1990 by now. And this lovely young girl who's the paralegal in our team, she said to me, you know, you talk a lot about what you're going to eat and what you do. She goes, have you ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, And she goes, well, I'm a member. And she was this gorgeous girl from Texas wearing her St. John suit because everybody dressed at the time that way. And I thought, how is this possible? Because not that I'm judgmental at all, but I thought the people who went to Alcoholics Anonymous were on, you know, the corner of the street or living under a freeway. So I said, okay. And she said, well, they have something for people like you. And I said, oh, I know, I've been. She said, you have? I said, yes, it doesn't work. And she said, really? So you got a sponsor? I said, I bought their book. She said, okay. She said, but then what? I said, well, I don't really think it's for me. You know, I just don't think it's quite my cup of tea. And I then she said, well, why don't we go to a meeting together? And I said, all right, that would be so, so nice. That would really, that's really kind of you. I'll never forget her sitting there with the pink and the black skirt. I remember the whole thing and was so annoyed. And we went to a meeting. Every now and again, so, some people had meetings in their houses at the time in OA. And we went to some lady's house, and everyone was so nice to me, and I think I said yes to another person, which I did a lot when you offered to sponsor me. I said yes a lot of times. And I never called you, and I'm sorry, and you'd leave me numbers, you know, messages on my machine. Was I okay? And I would just hit delete, delete. And then, you know, I found a new diet. I got thin. I got a new boyfriend. I got a new job. Oh, my gosh, I can buy a house. I've got my green card. I mean, who needs OA? Who needs OA? So who needs OA? Susan needs OA. Because once she starts, she can't stop. And once she stops, she cannot start again. But left to my own devices, when they say to you, well done, you're on maintenance, that big M word sends me out. It doesn't work. And I know today that I have a daily reprieve, and it's contingent on many, many things. Many, many things. So came in and out, came in and out, and I started to come in more. I wouldn't quite go to all the same meetings because I was hoping you really wouldn't know my name. And if I sit in the back, and you can see my hair was big and curly at the time, so I kind of shoved, you know, put my face over it. And when there were still those breaks, I would skedaddle out and never left my number on the phone sheet. Absolutely not. And, you know, to me today, that was just God kept tapping me on the shoulder. And tonight, if I don't say anything that resonates to you, I will say, listen for the invitation. And maybe something somebody often says, and this happens to me, that kind of aggravates or annoys me. I have to look at that and see what's missing, what I'm not doing. And I know today that what was missing for me was a relationship with God. Now, I never didn't believe in God, but how is God going to help me with the right food plan? That's why I went to Weight Watchers or to the doctors who stuck needles in my derriere. Those are the people I went to. They knew about dieting. What does God know? So kept on coming in and out, kept on coming in and out, and keep on going in the years, and my career's going well. I have a great life here in America, and clearly I've not come for Overeats Anonymous. And I'm meeting more and more people in 12-step rooms, and they're telling me about their lives. And it's really, I'm quite gobsmacked. I mean, the stories are amazing. They're amazing. And even when I used to come and sit in here, I used to think, unbelievable. But I'm not as bad as them. That hasn't happened to me yet. Because I was never going to weigh 250 pounds. I was never going to have to go to a store in Beverly Hills called Big and Beautiful, I think the picture's in there, to go to a black tie function to find a dress. And still have to wear God knows what under it to hold myself in. It wasn't as hip as Spanx at the time. It was nothing sounding that good that everybody wore. And I was blowing things up in my life. I was destroying relationships with my family, with friends, even though I would tell you that I wasn't. I absolutely was. I had a broken bridge, and I didn't know how to fix myself. And I went to therapy, and I had lovely therapists. And they let me moan, and they let me groan. It's okay, it's okay. Until one day I found somebody who didn't do that. And he was somebody who worked with addicts. And I will just say, bless his heart, and I had lunch with him like the first few times that I reached my year anniversaries here, and I haven't been able to find him since the pandemic. I think they moved out of state, and he was very overweight, and when I used to have my sessions, he used to have his dinner plate literally on his belly and talk to me about how I needed to go to OA and stop eating. Bless. But anyway, and I used to leave those sessions, and I used to drive through, and I used to buy the two-for-ones and everything. And my friends would always say to me, we never see you eat anything. We never see you eat. Well, I could prepare a Thanksgiving meal in the car and you wouldn't see me eat the whole thing. Because I'm cunning and I'm baffling. And this disease is really, really powerful when it has you in its grips. And the only thing I know today is until I, you know, have been blessed with doing the work. It says that until you do this and you have this entire psychic change, this will be repeated over and over again. You're going to make all of these firm resolutions. And what I didn't know was that I had this phenomenon of craving. Because every time, I don't know about you, and I can't speak to bulimia or anorexia because I didn't play with either of those, but I like a reward. When I come to the front of the room and I've done this, they used to give ribbons at Weight Watchers, that's how old I am, and I had all the ribbons, and then they gave you badges, and I had them, and I loved the applause. But then when I left, what was I supposed to do? I would go out and use my optional calories, and then, but it still wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. I had a God-sized hole. So fast forward to into the 90s, and I go home for a family wedding, and there's nothing like a good trip with your family to really, you know, pain is the touchstone, right? And if you think you're in that bitter morass of self-pity, you all have families, I'm sure, that you can identify at one time or another. And I went home, and I guess I'm going to tell you my great story because it's just coming to mind. My sister was getting married, and we were estranged at the time. I kind of got the notice from my dad that I was coming, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm coming. And we went to arrange for a breakfast or a brunch the day before, and, you know, you go to Costco and everything is rather large. And I was clearly running high on anxiety, and they were behind me, and it was a very short drive, I would say, maybe from here, if you go down San Vicente, Santa Monica, okay, we'll give myself some grace there, and I just started popping them like pills, just popping them, and I used to do that when they were frozen, by the way, and rip the inside of my mouth. I mean, that is the kind of compulsive overeater that I am. So all those people who I thought used to go to AA and live under bridges, the disturbing behaviors that I used around food were no different. I'm an alcoholic with food. That's who I am. So we get home, and we go to take out the container, and it was done. All right, done and dusted. And my dad, I remember, he just looked at me and gave me the keys, and he goes, "You need to go back." And I can just remember being gobsmacked myself. How did that happen on this 7 or 8 minute drive? And I used to think, well, isn't that better than me saying, I hate it that you made me come, I this, I that. But then when I couldn't get into my clothes, I'm screaming at my dad that he's cooking with too much salt. And they just all used to walk away from me. They just used to walk away from me. So by the time the day of the wedding came, I had to do a little bit of surgery underneath to get into my dress because I always came equipped with garments that would help with that. You know, I always made sure that I had a prescription for diuretics because it certainly didn't help you lose 10 pounds, but in my mind. So I came back and something happened at Heathrow Airport and I was done. I was done. And I came back and I made a call to not the person who invited us to the OA meeting, but the person who I went with had moved to Florida and she had lost all her weight. And I called her and I said, whatever you're doing, I need to do it. Will you tell me what you're eating? And she said, no. And I said, what do you mean? I said, I've just come back and I'm crying and I'm doing all the drama. And she said, you need more than that. You need somebody to help you, you know, with your food plan, but you need to go through the doctor's opinion. You need to see what sets off that phenomenon of craving for you, and you need to work the steps. Otherwise, nothing will be any different. So here they are again, trying to pull me into their club. And I said, okay. I said, but I can only work with the person who's worked with you. And she goes, this LA is the hub of Overeats Anonymous. This is where it started. I said, I don't think anyone's available. Should you just come back from London? How do you know? So she gave me this woman's number under duress, because I can be really, really annoying. And I called this woman for 2 days nonstop. I don't even want to tell you how many dropped calls I made to her. And she finally called me back, and I said, you have to help me. And she said, I think this is really a silly idea. I'm in Florida. You know, people didn't sponsor long distance then. Since, you know, Zoom and the pandemic, I have a sponsee in Ireland. I mean, how would we have ever met before? That wouldn't have happened. So definitely the world is different. So I convinced her. So then it's a Sunday night, okay? So get this, I'm on my big phone with all of the numbers, with the machine in it. That's, you know, there we are, standing in my kitchen in Encino. And here's where my life changed. This is where I knew that there was going to be no middle-of-the-road solution for a girl like me. And she said to me, what are you having for your dinner tonight? And, I mean, I can still remember sweating from the inside out and saying, well, it's Sunday, and I'm going to start in the morning. And this is where she saved my life. She said, Susan, you've been on the phone with me for over an hour crying. You're willing to call me at 4:45, 5 days a week, and 7 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. If you don't tell me what your dinner is tonight, you won't call me in the morning. And I just went, okay. And that began my journey. That began my journey. And I heard a speaker say a few weeks ago on my set, I go to this Saturday morning meeting on Zoom with 300 people. It's unbelievable. And he said, this is the greatest show on earth. And there was a time when I would have cringed. But, you know, this is how I hear that. So I came into the rooms. I flew to Florida to Fort Lauderdale twice. I gave Bonnie my fifth steps. As I'm going, I'm coming to meetings. You're all getting prettier. I'm not sitting in the back. You're all nicer. I'm letting you hug me. And you're not so bad. Who knew? God knew. I certainly didn't know. So I found a sponsor out here who was Maxine R., who recently passed away. Actually, she was mine and Steppy's sponsor for a long time. She was the first treasurer that Overeats Anonymous ever had. She's one of the original ladies in OA, and if you, beyond our wildest dreams, she's mentioned in there many, many times. And we got to work, and I met her at Serenity Sunday, and I went over to her, and we started working together, and she was no nonsense. She didn't want any of my nonsense, that was for sure. And I used to go and visit her regularly at the OA office. She was our special worker, and everybody used to love going to visit Maxine. People would take their lunches or go and have a coffee with her, and it was really very, very special. And you know, when I think back to what that person said about the greatest show on earth, how I see it is, you know, we have all these little tents and people come in and they sit in the back row and everybody's making their way right into the center of the herd, into the big tent. And the ringmaster is God. And, you know, we just keep on going and growing and holding each other's hands. And it's, as Leslie, I know, always says, you know, it's those links. That's what keeps us going. I put my hand in yours. And really, this is the greatest show on earth. The miracles that we see in here are second to none. You know, maybe if some of you work in a hospital, I'm sure that you see greater miracles. But you really do see people reborn here. People on the brink. You know, I've heard, you know, stories here of girls who just involuntarily couldn't stop vomiting. You know, I've met people who've been on IV drips. You know, we've had losses here. You know, it's permanent, progressive, and fatal, and we don't always talk about the fatalities. And, you know, I'm glad today that I'm not one of those, because 250 pounds today would be my starting point. I'd be kidding myself. Or I'd be thinking that those needles with all those new names that everybody's using right now would be a good option. And I never read the fine print of any of those things. You know, food addiction held the mortgage to my soul. And it talks about that in the AA 12 and 12. It says immediately in step one, nobody likes to admit complete defeat. But until I did, nothing changed in my life. And once I got to work and started working those steps, and in the words of Herb Kay, you know, honesty isn't enough, it's radical honesty. You know, I was taken to a place of willingness and I was willing to be taken. And here's, you know, today I don't have, I can't help if everybody doesn't like me. I know I can be annoying, I do my best. But with my family, you know, I have no broken fences today. All of those bridges have been fixed. I didn't grow up with my mom. My mom was a schizophrenic, and my dad raised me. And when I had worked the steps, I remember telling Bonnie, you know, I feel like I want to go and see my mum. I just want to see what it's all about. And I remember we were diet friends, and that was where some of the shopping when you diet came from. And, you know, she was definitely one of us. She was either very anorexic when she was on her medication or she was morbidly obese. And my mum passed away, and I can remember when my dad called me, I never thought I would feel this overwhelming sadness. And I was also very sad for the way it happened. She, you know, her illness just took her over, and she was dead for several days before anybody knew, until a social worker came. And I know that part of that was other than mental illness, food addiction, and she was morbidly obese and only 5'2". But the fact that I could feel grace and love for her, that is the direct result of working these steps as they're outlined in the big book. That is the direct result of this fellowship, of friends, of guidance, of listening to that clear-cut direction. And, you know, in ending, I just want to say, tell you the story again of the woman who passed this on to me the first time. You know, we get a lot of phone calls. We're all busy. We can't always return them. But I will say, from what I'm going to tell you, you never ever know how you are affecting somebody's life. So I never saw this woman again, but I never ever forgot her name. Don't ask me why. Her name is Stacy. And occasionally I'd go to a meeting, and one time I was standing in Serenity Sunday, and somebody who's been around for years came over to me, and he said, you know, she still comes, but she doesn't live here. And I just went, oh, great. We were 21. We are not 21 anymore. I wouldn't have recognized her, you know, in a bakery. So then I go to this old-timers meeting that's on Tuesday nights, and my friend over here always talked about her friend Stacy. Well, Stacy's a very American name. There's a lot of Stacys. And I said, okay, we never nothing. So I go to this meeting, and I'm speaking. I think you were there. I brought up the story, and I see like three people going, oh my God. And somebody writes to me in the chat, she's going to be here. I'm going to cry. And at the end of the meeting, so remember I was 21 or 22, now over 60, and she writes to me, Susan, it's me, Stacy, I'm here. And she's been Arlene's best friend since she was 21, when Arlene used to live out here and then moved back east. And she changed my life. I thought she was bringing me to a cult, but she brought me to truly what has been the greatest ride of my life. So, you know, when it says in a vision for you, you know, we won't have, you know, the benefit of meeting you. You just don't know, even if one time you see or you help someone. So, you know, we don't break our anonymity at the level of press, radio, or film. But she must have seen something in my eyes, because everybody else in that room was overweight, trust me. That was the kind of gym it was. It's not out anymore. It doesn't matter if I say the name, but it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. You can all figure it out. But there was something there that she invited me and this other girl. She probably saw something broken, right? If you've got it, you spot it. So I'm truly, truly grateful. I'm so happy to be back in this room. I love the new chairs. Thank you all for your friendship, your fellowship, and to my friends who came with me tonight. Thank you. Oh, yeah, I forgot the questions. Okay, I'm repeat the question into the mic. All right, let me turn off the timer. I think it's off. Okay. All right. Does anyone have a question or not? Hi.
Hi, I'm Anna. So I came here through AA. I've been sober almost 5 months. And just in, like, AA, it's simple in a way. It's just like, you're an alcoholic. You don't drink. Like, you just stop drinking. But, like, with a program like this, just like, you have to eat. So it's different in that way. So just like, how does the program like start? I'm just like curious. This is my first meeting. Do you get what I'm asking?
I do. So the question is, somebody's coming in and they're in AA and they're asking how it works because, what is it, you put the cork in the jug or something, I think they say. First of all, welcome, and there are other people here, one in particular I know who is in AA and could also, I know for me that in the doctor's opinion, you know, it talks about this phenomenon of craving and how these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. For me, I always knew that buying a cup and going to a couple of gallons of the cold stuff wasn't quite normal. I knew that a couple of slices and five loaves later wasn't quite normal. So it was pretty easy for me to define what those ingredients were that set up that phenomenon of craving for me. You'd work it through with your sponsor as you're going through this, and normally the foods that people don't want to put down the most are the ones that they're resisting. And, you know, we're fortunate today, there's a lot of nutritionists who work, you know, with people in 12-step programs. We have a pamphlet called Dignity of Choice, but the sooner you can, in my opinion, can get into the doctor's opinion, it will help you uncover and discover what those foods or the behaviors that come for the foods, because I have to work towards those sober behaviors that keep me, you know, in conscious contact with God. So, and welcome. But again, a lot of people here in AA.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. If you experience anger in your life, if you used to, if you still do, how do you use the program to get through, especially in particular, the emotion of anger, the experience of anger?
Sure. I can definitely get twitchy about things when people...
Can you repeat?
Oh, yes. The question was, thank you for the reminder, how do I handle anger? Well, for example, I've lived here for a long time, and people in Los Angeles don't like to indicate, and I've just given up on it. So I don't even write that on my nightly review anymore. It's just a thing. They don't indicate when they turn the corner. I don't know why. They go through the lanes, this and that. I'm just like, okay, just drive. I get more withdrawn than angry. But I today have relationships with people who I will call. If it's something that I've done, I will call someone and do a 10 step. I really have to look at, like on the nightly review that I do, which is all here in the book, you know, were you loving and kind to all? And I once did this little workshop and somebody said, were you loving and kind to all? I'm like, absolutely. And this person said, so you've never been in Trader Joe's and somebody's written a check and it's really, you know, sort of aggravated you? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, but what is that? So she goes, well, you're loving and kind to all. But when it, I mean, I don't get super angry. And if I get aggravated over something, I do, you know, God is in the pause. God is in the pause. So sometimes I can be in situations that I can't make a phone call and I'll run to the loo. I'll do something to pray and just get back into conscious contact with God, because I can become separated if I choose to very quickly, and that I'm sure would not be pretty for anyone. So, Mary Pat?
Can you talk a little bit about how your food changed, like from the time when you were like dancing around OA and then coming out, and then when you hit your bottom and then came in and started working it? What changed, both with food, I guess, and with
poker too? Sure. So the question was, how did things change in my life with food when I came in and was in recovery? So, you know, one thing for me, I dieted my whole life. So I was quite a champion at that. So I hear a lot of people say they have withdrawals, or did you feel this? I honestly didn't, because it was every other day of the week, sometimes more successfully than others. What I couldn't do anymore was just do it on this, but don't I get to have a cheat day on a Sunday? Don't I just get to have a bit of this? Don't I have to get a bit of that? And for those of you, you know, who are in AA, you don't ever see anybody stand at the podium and go, it was just a little error. It was just, you know, it was dripping. It was dripping off the side of the bottle. It's okay. That's not sober. And so I can't use those behaviors today anymore. I eat with other people all the time. I don't eat in my car. Those kinds of things. But I just stopped lying about it. I just stopped lying and had to, again, immediately work on that relationship, you know, praying, meditating, so that I could have that emotional rearrangement. And I also found, and this goes back to the question about anger, you know, God rewires your heart. So the things that used to anger me, I mean, I was so embarrassed about my mom growing up and so angry, why was she like that? And yet to an immense sadness when she passed away. So again, once the fork goes down, for me, I know that I had to keep on working pretty rapidly, you know, not in a week, but, you know, I had to keep on going and doing something and using those tools as handrails, you know, to God and being in the steps each and every day, you know, with other people today. So. Oh, hi.
Thank you for your share. What do you do to build such a strong relationship with God?
So I never didn't believe. Yes, sorry, I keep forgetting. I just want to annoy Michelle clearly. How did I build a relationship with God? So I used to go to yoga, and I used to lie there in Shavasana, and I this, and I went away to weekend retreats. Everything was to try and stop eating. So I had to realize that God is all around me, in me, through me, in here, around all of you. And definitely past Sunday nights when I was crying about what I was going to wear to work. And something happened to me along the way, and we were actually just talking about that. I did this last weekend. I did the breast cancer walk in 2000. And I trained, and the girls who I walked with couldn't train with me. They were mums, and they had different schedules, and I lived in Encino, Woodland Hills, whatever. We couldn't walk together. And they tell you, and if you're as anal as me, they say, don't walk with your Sony Walkman at the time, or your iPod, or whatever it was, because that weekend we need you to pay full attention. And again, nobody indicates, nobody pays attention to pedestrians out here either. So you have to be fully alert. So I started going on these four-mile walks, and you have to build up to a 26-mile walks back-to-back. Who did I have to talk to? God. I wasn't going to walk along Ventura Boulevard or over here in the summer when I used to come down Vicente and be talking out loud to myself. So that was when I started to, you know, just see things around me or see the miracles that God performs, you know, all around me. And that really changed it, because it was uncomfortable just to sit still in meditation. I mean, I do listen to guided meditations now again, but there was a long time where I didn't. And I really do think that that time, those walks, training for that 9 months really developed that inner muscle that you're not alone, you're going to be okay, you are kept safe and protected if you stay close to God. So, we good? Oh, Ingrid.
Question. Can you talk to us about how you work step 12 and what that means for you?
Sure. How do I work step 12? Thank you, because I didn't get to that, and that is one of my favorite things, and I think it's an experience that nobody should miss. You know, even before you can work with others, just being here, you always have greeters, being of service, putting out the literature, something, you know, like it said on that show, a room where everybody gets to know your name. When they're sitting at the bar and they turn around and they all say hi to you, well, that's what Overeaters Anonymous is like, and all those 12-step rooms. And, you know, there is nothing like seeing the light return in other people's eyes. There's nothing like, I'm sure, when Bonnie started working with me and I was sitting there like this and thinking that I knew everything, that humbling, that leveling of pride, right? Admitting I'm powerless and P.S. my life is unmanageable. And just to see that and, you know, carrying this message, and what is this message? It's not Susan's opinion, even though she has a ton of them. Mm-hmm. It's working these 12 steps. It's this staircase of recovery that we, you know, run up and down, and sometimes we get stuck. And it's, you know, also knowing that I can't carry other people along. Like, none of you could carry me along for those 16 years when I didn't want to know and when I ran out the door. You can keep on smiling at me. You can ask me for coffee 100 times. I'm going to tell you a lie every single time of why I'm so busy and I can't go, because I was just going home to eat. But I really, you know, and it says here that nothing so much will keep you immune. it gives you immunity, but one of the main things that I love here, it says life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. I mean, we met on Zoom and now, you know, you're my friend and I see you and it's so nice. And it says in its experience you must not miss. And it also says there'll be the bright spot. And it really, really is. I mean, it really, really is wonderful to have that. And look, I was fortunate before the pandemic that I had local fellowship. I'd been in the Valley going to Focus on Permanent Recovery for 20 years. I've been coming here, you know, people like Leslie and, you know, all of you, for some of you, for decades. But, you know, I do also enjoy how we're able to give it away to people who live all over the world. And, you know, it's just incredible. So if you aren't sponsoring, get ready to, because it's fabulous and you shouldn't miss it. So get in the center of the herd, whoever your herd is.
Okay, it is now time for our seventh tradition.
So I'm just so on you.